Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Let's talk more about the resolution of the war in Gaza. Why is it so difficult? Why has it proven so difficult when we look at the, and I won't say simplicity, because the Iran war was anything but simple. And it might have been resolved, in inverted commas, fairly quickly. It certainly doesn't mean that it is it was simple either. But how could that one be resolved in that period of time and Gaza still ongoing? Dr. Dan Dyke is the president of Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. A very good morning to you. Hope you are well. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us.
Pleasure. Hi to all my friends in South Africa.
This is just almost never ending. You know, we see signs and we see here talk of another round of another ceasefire, another resolution around the hostages. And we are understandably a little bit skeptical. Why has this proven to be so difficult?
Well, this has been I would say, an historic classic case for military planners and educators to understand going forward, because the Hamas built over a number of years the most sophisticated, consequential underground system of terror tunnels that the world has ever seen. And it's actually larger than the London Metro, something that probably has entered the South African discourse for time. But what continues to happen is that the 50 remaining hostages have been spread around this 500 square mile underground terror network to a degree that, in which it's very difficult to locate all of them to help them to save them militarily. And the other issue is that Israel has made tremendous progress militarily in eliminating the upper and mid-level Hamas command structure. But the problem is, as we speak right now on this interview, on this discussion, Howard, the hostages are more and more endangered the more progress Israel makes on the ground, because they're coming closer and closer to many of them, and they can't make additional military progress without threatening the lives of their own of Israeli and other people being held by the Hamas.
So the delicacy around it seems to be what most of this issue is. What about Hamas themselves? Is there, who is negotiating? What do we even know about Hamas's infrastructure, hierarchy, and decision-making ability within Gaza?
Well, there are two sets of political leadership. One in primarily in Doha and in Qatar, and the other on the ground. And it's there's a lot of lack of clarity. 90% of their senior level, 95% of their senior level leadership has been killed, but there are still representatives of the Hamas that are negotiating. And from what we understand in Israel this morning, there is a deal, there is a pact that is being designed as we speak that will include what we call a package, a total package deal. Behind it are very much are Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Israel is, for the first time, mentioning what we say a total package, a regional package deal,
right,
which would mean the return of hostages, cessation of the war in Gaza, as well as the very consequential and parallel development of normalization deals, expansion of the Abraham Accords with Saudi Arabia and a number of different countries. Syria has been in the headlines in the last 12 hours. So there's something very consequential
interrupt you, noteworthy is that none of Syria's demands involve Gaza. which was I found really fascinating
true.
Because it's all about Syria. It's all about Syria, the U.S., and Israel. It isn't.
You make a good point. You make a very good point. What we're witnessing is the decentralization of the old Middle East Arab order, in which, and this is one of the positive effects of a successful Israeli military operation against the Iranian regime, nuclear, ballistic, and regime elements, is that it is really sent a cognitive ballistic missile, if you will, across the region and sent a message that the countries should be worried and are more concerned about their own, let's call it, state interests. We saw that, by the way, Howard, with the Abraham Accords. That was the whole concept of the Abraham Accords, was to de-link the entire Middle East Arab world from the Palestinian issue as the driving issue, as the veto. The Palestinians had the veto over all of these individual state interests. And that concept has multiplied by 100 since October the 7th, and particularly since Israel began to win this overall war that had been sourced in Tehran, but had been expressed in Hezbollah in Lebanon, and then with the change in Syria, Israel in September of 2024 began to completely change the tide of this integrated war driven by Tehran, to which a lot of the proxies of Iran have disappeared, practically speaking. And now states are looking at Israel as the strong horse, very much the strong horse, and the United States as the super strong horse. So everybody's beginning to retract from this sort of centralized enmity towards Israel and towards the United States, and they're all saying, you know, I better worry about my own future as one of 22 nation states in the Arab world.
Yeah, it always reminds me of the Maginot Line, that the Germans just simply went around it. By going around the Palestinian issue, which is a blocker, there's a greater chance of success. What about the fact that Hezbollah is no longer the threat it was? Iran is no longer the threat. Will that, there is obviously still Qatar, who is a supporter of Hamas. How does that impact and influence the current negotiations?
Well, first of all, Iran is still a threat. I've taken a much more cautious approach than some of my colleagues here in Israel. Let's be very clear with ourselves that the Iranian regime still possesses hundreds of, if not more, hundreds of ballistic missiles. We know that they had 2,500. We know that at least 60 to 70% were destroyed. But that still, that still leaves them with hundreds, or if not a little bit over 1,000 missiles. They have missile launchers. They have the ability to mobilize international terror. They still have great influences in places, by the way, like South Africa, which we know from the last ANC elections, the Iranian regime in Russia played a particularly malign role. So I bring that up as to say they have a distribution system of terror and subversion around the world, which they have still to really operationalize after they were severely degraded in the June 13th Israeli operation. That's number one. Qatar is Hamas. Qatar is Hamas. Hamas is Qatar. Because there's a lot of misinformation running around the international media, Howard, in which they say, well, Qatar, they're really peaceful. They're sort of an erstwhile, sometime ally of the United States. I think regrettably, there are some not small business interests by certain people in the political system in the United States, as well as others, which keep them connected to the United States. But let be very, very clear. They are the ideological engine and the financial engine that is fueling Hamas's activity, while at the same time they're trying to put out the very fires that in our view they've ignited and they keep advancing.
So the fact is that they aren't really called out for it, which I find strange. We talk about it, everybody knows this, But somehow there is, appears to me to be a resistance to call them out by Israel, by the U.S. Why do you think that is? I mean, do you agree with that, firstly?
Yes, I do. Yes. I, first of all, there's substantial pressure from the United States not to call it out, not to end it. And secondly, I think we have to admit that the current and the previous Netanyahu government had been working with the Qataris and taking Qatari money in order to maintain a relatively stable situation in Gaza in the couple of years leading up to October 2023. So we ourselves had been engaged with the Qataris. We ourselves in Israel had believed that the Qataris could be an effective negotiator because of their closeness and their, you know, ideological and financial sponsorship of the Hamas. But we see that's simply not the case. The Hamas leadership on the ground are the ones that are calling the shots. And let's be very clear, for the Hamas, if there is one 12-year-old child standing with a victory sign over a burnt out building or car, that for them is victory. That is why this war has gone on for so long, because the Hamas's measure of victory is survival to any degree, and to cause Israel to bleed. And we in the West, including, I might say, South Africa as well, as believes that, you know, winning or total victory or if you say complete military success would be the image of Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany raising their hands and saying we're ready to come to the negotiating table with the United States and the Allies have defeated us. That's not the way the Middle East works. The Middle East works according to the rules of the long war, which, by the way, we saw with the Soviets, we saw with the Nazis. Right. So, but that's the way they work. It's all about survival, survival and making your enemy bleed over time. And over time can mean decades. It can mean centuries, is the concept of victory. So that's why we're facing a very, very difficult set of opponents. And I think Israel and the United States have done very, very well together by setting back the Iranian death machine by a number of years. We still don't know exactly how much damage and how many years they've been set back. But clearly, I do see, by the way, just to make the final point about the Hamas integration with Iran, that we are about to see, we're very close to seeing, I think, an historic deal happen, which would end, I think it would end, it would return the hostages, and it would end the Israeli counter terror offensive in Gaza, right. And it would include more positive normalization peace deals with a number of countries. I think we're just about there, and that is because. Or that is due to Israel's overwhelming, with the United States' help, but Israel's overwhelming
success.
Momentary success,
right.
in Iran.
Iran. Dr. Dan, we do need to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're a little bit over in the news, but it was certainly well worth doing so in order to chat to you. That's Dr. Dan Diker, President of Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs.